After only 10 months on the job, Bonner's Ferry Herald reporter Ned Newton is moving on to the next chapter in his life, and that makes me a bit sad. Friday, August 15th, is Ned's final day with the newspaper. He will be staying in town through the rest of August, but he will then be moving back to his home in Texas to be with family and friends and find the next chapter in his life. As a former journalist myself, I found Ned's writings for the newspaper to be excellent. He put in extra effort to cover stories in depth. He did more than just scratch the surface of whatever he was covering. He often interviewed a variety of people to get different viewpoints and perspectives, and he knows how to write. I must admit, I am not surprised at his short tenure with our local newspaper. He's just too good for the Bonner's Ferry Herald. Now that's not a slam on our local paper, it's just that Ned's talents are more suited for larger newspapers. And although Ned speaks of how much he likes the area and the people, it has to be difficult for a young man in his early 20s to live in such a small town with his girlfriend over 1,000 miles away. If you didn't follow Ned's stories, you missed out. You can always dig up the old newspapers of the past 10 months and check them out. Join me after this short message from my sponsor as Ned reflects on some of the bigger stories that he covered and some of his insights into what makes North Idaho special and almost paradise. EL Automation and its high-speed internet has made my job in producing this podcast so much easier. In my previous podcast, I shared with you how the new service reduced the time to transfer my recording to my editing software from around 2 hours to 2 minutes. Well, the big test was going to be uploading my finished podcast up to the cloud for global distribution. I have exciting and good news, and I'm sure you have all been eagerly wondering what the outcome would be. My uploading went from 2 to 3 hours to 5 minutes. Yes! I can also happily report that my computers and TVs are all working faster with no delays or hiccups. It is awesome, and I am so happy. Now, I feel I have no excuses for not doing videos on YouTube, and that's going to change my podcast greatly in the very near future. By the way, being the cheapskate that I am, the speed that I subscribe to is actually their lowest entry-level speed. They have much faster speeds if you need or desire. So if I need a faster speed because of the introduction of videos into my podcast, I can do that. So if you have any speed or connectivity issues with your internet provider, or maybe you can't even get internet where you live, I strongly urge you to consider calling Eric at EL Automation. Their phone number is 208-267-7220. That's 208-267-7220. Or check out their website at ELInternetNW, standing for Northwest.com. That's ELInternetNW.com. ELInternetNorthwest.com. And do me a favor, tell them that I sent you, okay? Thanks a lot. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another podcast of Almost Paradise here in North Idaho. And we're in mid-August now, and things are busy, and we're starting to think about getting firewood ready for the winter. But today I have a repeat guest, Ned Newton, the ace reporter for the Bonner's Ferry Herald. How you doing, Ned?
Great. Flatter me.
Ah, ace reporter. Are you like Lois Lane or Jimmy Olsen or Clark Kent? I don't know. I don't know what you got on under that t-shirt. Maybe you got a big old S under there. We're about 30 miles from the Canadian border for my listeners across the country and around the world. And Ned came to us in February. So that was the one and only time we had him on, and I was planning on having him on more often than that because he often has a perspective, a little more information about things going on in Bonner's Ferry and Boundary County that I may not be aware of or you may not be aware of. And Ned, you kind of threw a curve at me when you came in this morning because you got big news in your personal life.
Yeah, I do. But before we get into that, I just want to say, I mean, it's put on the back burner a little bit by you, but that's because
Oh, that was
you've
my
had some
fault.
great guests on, and I think the show's been growing.
Well, we're trying, and I did intend to have you on more often, and then I just kind of lost track of time.
I'm honored to be back, so
Well,
thank you.
That's great, and the timing is perfect because what's happening later this week?
Well, this is my last week at the Bonner's Ferry Herald, and it's very tough to say goodbye, but I need to be heading back to Texas, spend some time with my family right now. And, you know, I've always thought that if the circumstances are right, I could see myself coming back here because this place is really special to me.
See, I'm really impressed with your writing. I'm impressed with your writing skills and your reporting skills. And so I'm not surprised that you're leaving. I don't know if it's greener pastures or just a shift, a change. I don't know what you're going to be doing in the next year or 2 years or 5 years. But as a former journalist myself from way back in the day, I just think you did a really, really good job. So I'm not surprised to see that your tenure was somewhat limited. How long were you with the Herald?
Just coming up on 10 months. So,
that's it?
Yeah.
Oh, you can't
Short
leave yet
time.
then. No. No, we may not approve that.
Well, you know, local journalism, it's got a tremendous amount of value.
Yeah.
Like it's the most trustworthy form of journalism out there.
Yeah.
And greener pastures, I mean,
how did you find
contentment in Bonner's Ferry. I mean,
how did you find the job here at Bonner's Ferry in the first place? Because you're from Texas and where'd you go to college?
Went to Washington and Lee in Virginia.
In Virginia. And
And
somehow you found your way to Bonner's Ferry.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm drawn to the Mountain West, the
yeah.
Northern Rockies, and found myself out here just kind of exploring a little bit, living in my car, basically, out in Montana for a while. And
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, just I did a lot of traveling out west, and then stumbled upon this job, and it was the right place, the right time, and I couldn't be more grateful for that opportunity.
I live such a sheltered life. I never lived out of my car. I just had a friend on, him and another guy who were school bus drivers here for many, many years. And he lived in the school bus for a long time. Not the school bus he drove for the kids, but earlier in a previous life, he lived in an old school bus over in Oregon somewhere. And, you know, he was a full-fledged hippie. And I just didn't do that.
I think I'm talking it up a little bit because it was camping and I stayed in a few different places along the way, like motels, and I stayed with somebody in their farmhouse at one point. So it's a bit of a stretch to say just living in my car, but just road tripping.
It adds to the story.
Yeah, it's an embellishment though, which
Like,
I'm not supposed to be doing.
You're not supposed to be doing it.
As
Well,
a
as a writer, you do, but as a reporter, you got to be careful.
Right.
You got to find that middle line. So how is life almost paradise?
It's been incredible this summer. I mean, coming out of the winter, every single day gets longer and more beautiful as it starts to get greener and warmer. And I spent a lot of time out of the Kootenai National Wildlife Refuge before it closed in June. And it's kind of my habitat
You
out
were
there.
probably disappointed when that happened, when it
Oh
closed.
yeah. Yeah, I was. And I mean, I think it's a really good thing for the long term. And for my time here, I mean, that was a place I went there three times a week for a couple months.
Oh, wow.
Throughout the spring.
Just to recenter or just
Yeah.
de-escalate or
Yeah. And collect my thoughts too about, you know, if I'm thinking about a story. And then it was a helpful thing for me to get out there and just go for a walk or jog. And I saw some good wildlife. There's a stretch where you couldn't go on a walk or a jog out there without seeing a dozen painted turtles.
Oh, well, painted turtles.
I mean, they're everywhere. They're
Yeah.
everywhere. But I also saw moose a couple times. I saw a cow with her calf, and that was really cool.
You getting pictures?
I got a video of it.
Oh,
I'll show it to you
that's
afterwards.
cool. That's cool. So in a very abbreviated sense though, how in your impressions as a reporter here in Boundary County, North Idaho, how is North Idaho not almost paradise?
That's a good question. I think for me, so I, like we just talked about, I moved out here sort of a little bit on a whim in the midst of some solo journeying I was doing after graduating college. And while here, the winter was tough on me as a Texan, Texas boy. So I had to figure out how to deal with that. But then once the spring came around, I really was able to find peace out here. And the one thing that I was lacking was just, I came out here by myself and there's not a lot of people in their 20s out here. And those who are here are just here in the summer, coming home from college usually. So I have a pretty broad network of professional relationships with people for my job, but I didn't have as much of the personal relationships. So having someone to share it with is kind of, if having that, couldn't ask for anything more, in my opinion.
And you're just starting to develop a personal network like that, and now you're leaving.
Yeah, I know. I think it's one of those things for me where the feeling never really hits you until it's happening. I can anticipate what it's going to feel like to say goodbye, but I guarantee you when I'm driving out of here, it's going to hit me pretty hard.
Now, when you were up here getting settled in, what was it, 10 months ago?
Just about.
Okay. And it took a while for you to get connected on a personal level with the community and so on. Even though you're a reporter, there's just a difference. What would be your advice for people who just move here to get, whether they're in their 20s or 40s or 50s, and whether, how do you get connected into a community that is, it's a small community, so in some ways it's kind of a closed net community in some ways. So how do you get into the community so much?
Well, I think one thing that this town does really well is it has some very strong social clubs. The Rotary, which you're a member
Which
of,
I'm a member of.
is an excellent example of that. And that's a chance to get plugged in and also do something for the good of the community.
And make a lot of friends,
Absolutely.
meet a lot
But,
of people.
I think that, if you're a family, I think that the schools and the churches, those are both excellent ways to join a community within the community, so to speak.
Right.
There are a lot of great people in this town. There's a lot of people who do things behind the scenes that make this town so special. And if you just put some effort in looking around, you can definitely make some connections through doing that.
But you have to make the effort.
You got to make some effort.
Yeah.
It's hard to do if you're staying put just on your property, which I know a lot of people like to come out here and live.
Isolate.
It's a reclusive, it can be a reclusive environment out here, which is not a bad thing at all. I think a lot of people find a lot of comfort and solace in being out in this beautiful part of the country. And
I
I
think
certainly did.
I like the word I like is balance. You want your private time, you want your own time, or maybe just your family time, but you also need some community connections and be involved in some other things, but you don't want to do too much of that because then it takes away time from your family or yourself. And so it's really finding and striving for that balance.
I will say, if you're going to live a solitary life, this is an excellent place for it because you can find so much comfort in being out in nature out here. There's so much. It's great company to be out. You go to the wildlife refuge, the wildlife management areas, or just if you have some land out in the country and you're just living a solitary life. It's a comforting place for that.
Yeah, it's very peaceful.
And people aren't going to bother you. You know,
And
if you want to go get involved, you can. If you want to stick to yourself, no one's gonna come knocking on your door and bug you
now
know.
for me, and we've never talked about this, and so if this is maybe this is a topic that you're not comfortable with, I don't know, but you did mention churches. And when you get up in the beauty of the mountains and the forests and the lakes and the rivers, to me, there's a real spiritual connection there. I just look at all that and I go, wow, what a mighty God that, all of this stuff that he gives us the ability to enjoy and appreciate and not worship his work, but through his works, you see how powerful and mighty he is, and then you can worship him. That's my perspective on it.
I absolutely feel the spiritual connection in a similar way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, that is something that this whole area certainly does provide. Now, there were some topics, there's some issues that you've covered, and I wanted to kind of touch base with you before you left, because now you can maybe step on some toes and not worry about future consequences. Maybe
Yeah.
not.
Well, I'm not gonna kick anybody on my way out,
No, because you
but
might come back.
exactly.
You hope to
Exactly.
come back, maybe.
And I'm not here to tear anybody down.
No,
So,
I'm not out.
but I
I'm
hear
not
what you're
looking for
saying.
that. I'm
Oh,
not looking for that. So one of the contentious issues here was the mill levy, which I'm not going to specifically get too much in with the school district, but we just found out that we are going to get a new elementary school.
yes, and this is an important detail. No bond. Our local tax dollars are not going to pay for the school, which is
Yes.
a huge victory
Now I
for
do plan,
everybody.
yes, and I do plan on having the superintendent on in the next week or two to discuss that. But do you see any downside to what finally happened with what exactly did happen?
So, for starters, like I said, there's no bond. What happened was the state lawmakers passed a new piece of legislation called House Bill 338. And what that did is it set aside $50 million to finance any rural school district facilities
Statewide.
statewide on the contingent that they submit a strong application to the state and they're awarded that money. And so it's a 13-page application that a school district can file to a panel of House Bill 338
Members.
members, I guess you could say, and it's 13 pages. You plead your case, and it's basically we've tried to pass local bond measures, and those have failed,
Past few years,
and
yeah.
those have failed, and we've had a state inspection that has found that our facility is a
The
danger.
Valley View Elementary School.
Valley View Elementary School, the state inspector who came by in 2023 said that it was one catastrophe away from being condemned. In the 90s, the gym collapsed. There was snow on the roof. The gym roof collapsed. And so they had a good argument. They had a good application. It was just 13 pages, but they supplemented that with 310 pages of additional information.
Our school
Our
district,
school district did,
yeah.
because they've been working on getting a new Valley View Elementary School for a long time. Definitely have made a hard push for it in the last 5 years, but they already have plans in place for, build designs and estimated costs. And the state actually awarded us with over 25%, excuse me, over 25% of the available funds from House Bill 338. They gave us over $13 million.
Okay.
And the nice factor about it too is that there's no strings attached at all, meaning they don't have to follow some strict plan that the state gives them. They don't have to say this school has to be built in
To
this
these
per
specific
right.
specifications.
There's a few stipulations. Each grade gets four classrooms, but beyond that, it's mostly in local hands. It's in the school district's control, and they're very interested in partnering with locals, local contractors, local architects, local craftsmen and artists and artisans and things of that nature to create a very local feel to the school. So it's not going to be a cookie cutter school you might see in southern Idaho.
Okay.
It's going to have
So
a very local feel to it.
they got this, what was it, 13 million?
They got 13.2 million from the state,
And then
and then they also had over 5 million from a previous piece of legislation
they've been kind of
that had
setting.
been set aside and collecting interest, the
Okay.
interest they used for their maintenance and operations.
Okay.
And so taken together, it's over $18 million.
And then there was something else. Wasn't there?
Well, so they had initially said they were going to use the 600,000 roughly amount of money that they would get from the sale of the old school district office building, but they are
But
actually going to be able to allocate that towards other things now that they have 18 million from the state.
okay. So we'll get into the real details with the superintendent, but it's a big step forward, I think, for the community.
Yes, absolutely. It's a 76-year-old building that was mostly made of the scraps from a decommissioned World War II base.
Yeah.
On Lake Ponderay.
Yeah, I don't think it was ever intended at the time of construction in the 1940s to last this long. Probably not. I don't know, but it was like,
Well, I can say that it is certainly on its last legs, so couldn't have come at a better time.
So now you mentioned something about the old school district office. Now what's going on with that?
So that's an interesting thing. The school district, they put it out to bid last fall.
Did
And
this used to be the old high school?
it's the old high school, and then it became the school district office building.
Yes.
And they put it out to bid because they've since evacuated that building.
Right.
And the winning bid was to Kootenai Tribe, put in a bid over $600,000 for it in November. But they've not finalized the deal yet because there's this very antiquated piece of federal law that actually the US government actually is the owner of a portion of the property that they were selling. So
And this was back in the late 1800s.
prior to Idaho's statehood. There
There you
was
go.
when we had our pioneering forefathers who were coming out west and settling this rugged landscape before there were cities or even before Boundary County existed. They passed this piece of legislation called the Townsite Act, which basically allowed the government to sell plots of land to settlers at a very good cost when this was still just the frontier. And they had a map that they designed that had alleyways and subdivisions and all that stuff. But there was no enforcement of how the owners of those land, how they built. And so as a consequence of that, there's an imaginary alleyway that runs through the school building that was just sold that is technically still in the ownership of the US government. So it's a very bizarre thing. And it's actually going to take an act of Congress to return the land use rights to the city, which at that point they can abandon the alleyway and the entire office building can come under the ownership of the school district and they can transfer that ownership.
And they can sell
Right. They
it.
can sell it now, but the tribe isn't interested in dealing with all of that because they want to be 100% owners of that property.
Do you know what the tribe is planning on doing with that?
They have, last I spoke to tribal chairwoman Jennifer Porter, they had said they had an eye on that property for a while, but it wasn't exactly clear what their intentions were with it. But it's a nice piece of property near the Kootenai River Inn. So
Yes.
that's me speculating. It's a strategic acquisition for them to have more property near near the casino in the
Yes.
hotel.
Yeah, for my listeners across the United States, or I mean even in South America or Europe or whatever, this property is right next to the Kootenai Inn, restaurant and casino. So there, it is an interesting location for them for future expansion, perhaps, or whatever. I mean, they got some ideas, I'm sure. So I'm going to throw a curveball at you. And again, for those of you wondering what's going on, I'm just asking Ned, a journalist, to give me a little bit of background information, sort of between the lines of his stories that he's written over the past 8, 9 months for the newspaper. Just some little fill in the blanks. And reporters often have some insights and some thoughts that go beyond the headlines, so to speak. But I'm going to throw a curveball at you. You got a t-shirt on that says Mighty Mike. What is that?
It's not as good a story as you're hoping for. This is a $1 t-shirt that I thrifted. Goodwill.
Oh, I mean, it's got some like military guys
Yes.
looking at a boy in the middle and whatever.
It's just to me, it's just a shirt.
It's just a shirt. Never mind
I'm
that.
sorry I don't have a better
There's
story for you.
stories with that, but
No, you're right. Sometimes,
you
yeah.
need to make something up. See, this is
I
my
didn't come
reason.
prepared with
Yeah,
my Mighty
Mighty Mike
Mike's
shirt.
spiel,
Well,
so
no, I
but
never wear anything without a reason, like
I
Winterfell.
just my thinking is people will say, oh, that's a cool shirt. I wonder what Mighty Mike's is, but they
Right.
usually aren't going to ask me about it, but they'll have that curiosity, and it just creates a little bit of intrigue.
A shirt that I need to buy and wear, especially at public deals like the county fair or whatever's going on, some festival, is it literally says, ask me about my podcast. That's
Yeah.
all it says.
Get some Almost Paradise in North Idaho merch. That
Yes,
would
the
do
merch.
well. That'd do well.
There's some cups, some stickers, some bumper sticker,
Some
whatever.
t-shirts. Oh,
That's
yeah.
right. That's right. So anyway, now we've had some issues concerning Forest Service management, the Boundary County Commissioners getting a little kind of crossways with the Forest Service on a couple of issues, and you've been covering those, and that's a relevant thing. So tell me a little more about that.
Yeah, so for the last, it's been a while since the timber industry has been a focus within any administration. And President Trump has made a big emphasis on we need to increase our timber harvests in our federal forest lands. And so he issued an executive order a few months back declaring a 25% increase in timber harvests in national forest lands in the American West, citing just a downturned economy, just decreased output from our national forest lands. We have incredible reserves and wildfire risks. And that was backed by the USDA secretary. And it was also backed by Idaho Governor. There was
Our own
Make
governor.
Forests Healthy Again was an
Yes.
initiative issued by Governor Brad Little a month after this executive order came out of Washington.
Make our forests healthy again.
Absolutely. And I believe it was, yeah. But anyway, so 25% increase in our national forest output, which is vital for a timber town like Bonner's Ferry to have more trees coming down and going into our mills. And so for the last several months, our county commissioners have been proactive trying to increase the harvests in our area, and they've run into some snags. There's a few different issues that we can dive into. There's grizzly bear regulations, which is a hyper-localized issue with our Selkirk Mountain ecosystems that has created a lot of roadblocks, literal roadblocks.
Yes, they actually put up gates and block
Yeah,
road access to these areas.
there's
Yes.
road density regulations that limit the amount of logging trucks you can actually have in our Forest Service roads because it's been found, this is research from the 1990s, that any motorized vehicle roads are destructive to grizzly bear habitats. So, consequence of that, it's been hard. We have multiple sales that could go online, but we have to wait for one to close out before we can get to the next one because you can only have so many cars, so many logging trucks
Oh, at
on the
any
Forest
one
Service
time.
road at any one time. So that's been something that they've been working with our Ranger District, trying to figure out ways to work around that or to stay in line with that, but what can we do given these setbacks from grizzly bear regulations? So that's one piece of it. And the second piece of that is they've been trying to get funding that was issued to our district, meaning we have Idaho and Montana are part of this District One of national forests, and District One got set aside millions of dollars to be issued to increase our production in our national forests. And so our county commissioners have been trying to find ways to get that funding, get the green light to get out into our national forests and harvest timber. They did that by issuing an emergency. It was an emergency declaration, wildfire risk, which is a,
And this was back like
and
in April, maybe, or
yeah, a few
somewhere in
months
there.
back. It's an uncommon declaration because there were no ongoing wildfires in our county,
But they could see the
but there is,
potential.
right, there's lots of overgrowth, and it's just trying to mitigate wildfire risk. And a good way of doing that is going out there and clearing out forests, which, as a side note, also creates inventory for our local mill. So it's
Okay.
sort of a two birds with
It's a
one stone.
win-win thing for us.
Yeah, absolutely. So they issued that. They sent a letter to the Forest Service, the Idaho Panhandle National Forest, stating their declaration, stating what the county needs. And since that has happened from Idaho Panhandle National Forest, it's been crickets. Haven't gotten any response. And so they've sent follow-up letters as well. And
The county commissioners have.
yes, and they haven't heard much of a response. So they're working diligently with the Kootenai Valley Resource Initiative, which is a an excellent partner to the county and to the Forest Service, and that's helped generate more sales than what you might see in Bonner County. So it's a collaborative effort, but it's been challenging for them to make progress because you're dealing with so many different government agencies at the local, state, federal levels.
Yeah, and one little policy seems to overlap another policy,
Right.
which impacts another policy, and so you've got all these different, I would imagine, policies and bureaucrats and people that have to sign off here, but they can't sign off here because somebody else has to sign off first, and on and on and on and on.
Yeah. So
Yeah.
we mentioned the executive order from President Trump was a 25% increase in timber harvesting on our national forest lands, which on its surface, it sounds like a lot. And that's a big part of the effort from our county commissioners. They're trying to mitigate fire risk, and they're also trying to create more production to source our mills.
Right.
But the interesting thing, if you look at a breakdown of where the logs actually come from, over 80% of the logs that are sourced to our North Idaho mills come from private forest lands. Then you get about 10% from the state, and then 10% from the national forest. And so a 25% increase in our area of national forest land harvests yields about 3% overall increase. So it's a little bit more marginal than it might look if you sort of dive a little deeper into it. And any progress is good, even if it yields just a month of inventory for our minimum
But it's
base
not a
logs.
total bonanza.
It wouldn't necessarily be a groundbreaking change
Right.
if we had a 25% increase. It's a step in the right direction, but
Yeah.
it's not to say that we're gonna have a 25% overall increase. It's 25% of 10%,
Okay.
essentially. So it's not a sweeping reform that's going to
It's not going to
help our
cause by
economy
itself, make us
vastly.
boom all of a sudden and
But
get things humming again like I guess it used to many, many, many years ago.
it does raise an important question, which is we have 80% of our county just about is owned by government, whether it's local, state, or federal government, and a majority of the land is owned by the U.S. Forest Service. And so it does raise an interesting question as to if the majority of our forest land is owned by the Forest Service, how is it that they're only supplying 10% of our local inventory for our mills? So it's an interesting, it's an interesting thing because if you look back to the 70s, that was a time when we were harvesting a lot of timber from our national forests. And that number has been on the downturn over the last 30 years to the point where right now it's just a small fraction of what it used to be.
And the economy of Bonners Ferry and Boundary County has certainly been affected in a negative way over the past 10, 20, 30 years. Things have it's a struggle for a lot of people up here.
Well, it's an important part of this town. It's a timber town. And I mean that's where this town got its start in a lot of ways. And
Right.
we have the infrastructure with our mills.
And we have the natural resource,
We have exactly.
but we just
And
can't access it like we potentially could. Yeah.
And so there's a lot of factors to it. Like going back to the grizzly bear thing, we have 95% of our national forest land is under a designation of grizzly bear habitat protection status. It's called recovery zones. And as a consequence of that, it's extremely difficult to actually get into the forests and harvest timber. So we have our own unique circumstances here as one of the few grizzly bear ecosystems in the United States, here in the Northern Rockies, the Selkirks. And that creates a unique set of struggles. But like I said, we've been overall, comparatively speaking, to say the Sandpoint Ranger District, we've been extremely competitive because of the partnerships between like the KVRI and
Who?
the Kootenai Valley Resource Initiative.
Okay.
And our county commissioners working to be as proactive as they can. So they're doing as much, they're working very diligently to make this happen.
Now, it's obvious that in your relatively short amount of time here, 8 months, you've learned a lot about the local area, the major players and movers and shakers and the policies and the issues and so on. And they just kind of all fell in your lap. And so you've kind of been learning along the way quickly. And that's impressive.
Thank you. I think that the some of the stuff with the like the grizzly bear regulations and just understanding the history of the town as a timber town, those things are really important to the identity of Bonner's Ferry. I think, having a good grasp of why we're here, why is this town here? And I think a
Right.
big part of that is it was logging and it was farming.
Right. Now, another issue that's kind of connected with as you mentioned grizzly bears, we have a lot of hunters up here. And of course they like to hunt elk and they feel that there's been a impact on their ability to hunt, whether it's elk or deer and so on, because of the increased number. There is an increased number of grizzly bears and an increased number in wolves. And so there's been some push back by local I guess hunters organizations and so on that say, it's time we need to have a grizzly bear hunting season because they've increased in such numbers. And they come down in the lower lands here and they start getting into a threatening situation, whether it's with gardens and orchards and chicken coops or kids playing in the backyard and things like that. And though we haven't had any real major grizzly bear encounters where anybody got hurt, there's some concern. And of course, the wolves population is something that really triggers a lot of people around here too. No pun intended, but so all of that is part of life in North Idaho.
We've had our members of Congress from Northern Rocky states for a long time have been making the push to delist the grizzly bear because it has recovered successfully since it was put on the Endangered Species Act in the 1970s. And we've actually seen a step toward getting it delisted recently. It's got to pass through so many hoops and ladders to get to finally become a reality. But the Fish and Wildlife Services recently, they declared that they're going to continue listing grizzly bears, and that got a lot of pushback. Our own members of Congress from Idaho were among those who petitioned the Fish and Wildlife Services to take the grizzly bears off of the endangered species list. And we're finally starting to see a little bit of traction on that. So it could come about. And then I think the argument is we return the management of these species to the states. And so if that does come to pass, then we could be looking at it. It now is up to our own state lawmakers to decide whether or not there would be a grizzly bear hunting
And of course, that
season.
makes it more accountable for they're more accountable than to the local citizens, the local voters,
And
and
it's a
so
little
on.
bit, it's pretty hard to track population numbers when you're dealing with wild species, especially in the Selkirk Mountains here, because they extend into Canada. And so not only do we not have the ability to track the population in Canada to the same degree we can here, but we also don't have any jurisdiction over how they're going to manage their wildlands,
Right.
how they're going to manage the mountains in Canada. So it's a
I did.
complicated,
Yeah.
yeah,
I had
so.
a gentleman on several a few months ago, and he talked very much about that specifically. British Columbia has a grizzly bear protection policy, and they're kind of starting to get crowded up there, and they start to come down south, and they come through the valley here a little bit. You know, they just start to encroach, and yeah, that.
There are definitely, there's estimations as to what the grizzly bear population is in our region, and there are skeptics who say that those numbers are lower than they're said to be lower than they truly are. And when it's in the case of the greater Yellowstone ecosystem and above that, like the Montana area, they have absolutely been successful in their grizzly bear recovery efforts. And so that's where the argument really has its legs as far as delisting. And then second to that, it's not just about hunting. There's lots of other reasons for it too. A big reason obviously is we have more local control over the mixed use management of our forests, but also, you know, there's livestock predation and there's the effects of the timber economy here. So there's few more things than just hunting that go into it.
And again, going back to the original proclamation, emergency proclamation by the commissioners, a lot of it, at least they, you know, they cloaked it or whatever under fire management. Now we had a big fire not too long ago, just south of here near the little town of Naples called the Clover Fire. Tell me a little bit about what happened there and how the response was and how, you know, the victims and so on of
It's a
that fire.
devastating situation. It's about a 30-acre fire that was human caused. And it's yeah, near Naples, there's a few properties out there. The Idaho Department of Lands and the Fire Marshal's Office rendered their official cause after interviews and just investigating on scene. And they actually had a confession from the people who started it, and it came out of the Blue Lake RV resort. It's not clear exactly who started the fire, but essentially it there's campsites there, fire rings, and there was a member of the maintenance crew, I guess you could say, grounds crew, groundskeeper, who was collecting fire pit ash. And collecting it into a burn barrel, and they take it up the hill to a cleared out area on top of the hill that's surrounded with there's neighboring properties, and it's a lumber yard for a couple of family owned businesses out there. They have their lumber yards, and this individual set the barrel down and it was still hot, and so it ignited the grass underneath, which then hopped the fence, hit the log decks of this family that owns UTR Land Management. It's the Sandlin family. It's a large and wonderful family, who lost millions of dollars in this fire. It's devastating. And then in addition to that, there was another family, the Tweet family, who they own a log cabin building business, and they also had a sawmill that burned down and lost a significant amount of inventory as well as a consequence of that. And it just so happened to be that day, it was extremely dry. It had been dry for a week or more, and it was also extremely windy. And so these natural conditions lined up in such a way that it was the perfect storm to create such a devastating fire. Had it happened the following day, it rained that night, there would have been no fire.
And let's talk about the response.
The response was one of the best that a lot of people say, one of the best that they've seen. Never seen anything like it in our area. We had at least, I think it was over 10 different aerial response, planes and
Helicopters.
helicopters come through, and a joint effort between state and local first responders, Idaho Department of Land, and about 80 first responders out there. But there was also South Boundary, Bonners Ferry Police or firefighters, and
Volunteer firefighter
North
units.
Bend. Yeah, all of the different firefighter volunteer districts all responded, and just on a dime,
They
they were
contained
there.
that as quickly
They
as you could
can
imagine possible.
absolutely, and they were collecting water from MacArthur Lake, but they were also pumping water out of Blue Lake, which was a source just right there for the pump trucks. So they had from the air, they had MacArthur Lake water coming down, and then from the ground, they had the Blue Lake water being pumped up the hill, and they were able to contain it 100%. About 30, less than 30 hours after it started. And it was a hot fire. It got within just a few feet of one of the homes of a Sandlin, a family home. And it was so hot that it was melting the roof. It was melting the plastic on the door. I saw the rectangular glass window in the side door had been warped into like a U shape. To give you a sense of how hot it was. But the fire line just got within a few feet of that house, but it did not actually ever catch the house on fire because of the quick response. And when you're dealing with a situation where it's in a residential area, the incident commander from IDL is going to, they have the authority to decide what is our response going to be? And they are going to throw everything that they have at a fire like that to keep it from destroying property. Because if that goes down the hill there, you're at the Alta Mill in Naples, and the amount of fuel they have, the amount of devastation that could have caused. And then you're dealing with,
The town itself, the
yes,
town of Naples.
exactly. So no houses burned down and no lives were lost.
Which is
And
incredible.
which is, yes, incredible. And then the unfortunate outcome for Blue Lake is it's just part of Idaho law where if it's a man-made fire, those who are responsible for the fire are liable for
And in
the
this
cost.
case, it's millions.
It's going to take them a few years to figure out because they have to, I mean, they got to get all the receipts for all the different expenses that went into
It's a lot.
putting out that fire. So I'm not sure what the cost will be. And then there's also from that point, it's going to turn to the courts to decide like how much can realistically be paid.
Recovered?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
Yeah. And it wasn't just the destruction of property, but there's also the price of reimbursing all of the fire organizations, firefighting organizations, the fire departments, the helicopter and airplanes that were
yeah.
used. It all adds up to a huge, big price tag.
And for the Sandlin family, I didn't get a chance to talk with the other families who were affected, but the Sandlins, they had just, millions in inventory from their
Okay.
logging business that was lost. But the family members said that they weren't going to be asking for recovery for all that, because it's just, I mean, that's they're not interested in like
Right.
creating complete financial devastation from that. So it's not going to be they're not going to be on the hook for everything.
Well, it was tragic, but it could have been a lot worse, but it was still
Yeah.
tragic nonetheless. Now we're going to lighten it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay? We're going to lighten it
Sure.
up because we just had the county fair here.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And that was a lot of fun, and there was tons of people here, and we just had all kinds of stuff going on. And one of the things you mentioned, which I did not go to, because I'm just not into that too much, but you appear to be, was the rodeo.
Oh yeah.
Why do you like their rodeo here in Bonner's Ferry, County Fair, the rodeo?
So I grew up going to the Fort Worth Rodeo.
Fort Worth, Texas,
Fort Worth,
a
Texas
little bit
Rodeo,
bigger.
which it's the biggest rodeo in the country, and it's people from all over the country who come out here, and it's, nine riders out of 10 are staying on their bull for 8 seconds. It's that kind of rodeo.
Almost boring.
Which, so that's the thing
I
is,
mean, yeah, everybody's so good. It's like, yeah.
right. So I love the rodeo here more than the one in North Texas, because of the way you just don't know what's going to happen. It's the most dangerous sport in America to ride a bull. And when you're dealing with a rodeo like this, you just don't know. There's going to be an outlier who can stay on there, and there's going to be most people. I mean, of course, you're riding a bull. Most people are not going to be able to stay on that thing, and it's an angry animal. It weighs a
It's
ton
an
with
angry
ivory
bull, and he's
horns.
very big, and he's
Yeah,
got horns, yeah.
so it puts you on the edge of your seat, because you just never know. You never know. Is this person gonna stay on there? Are they gonna get severely hurt? It's something you can't look away. But it makes you appreciate the bravery of the men who go out there and ride on that bull.
Now, how many bulls have you ridden?
Mechanical or I've not ridden a bull before. And
No.
I mean, it's definitely, I guess when you go to the Fort Worth Rodeo growing up, it's like, oh man, that's sweet. I would do that. Go to the rodeo here in town, you see just how you're putting your life on the line. Maybe
I've
rethink it a
never
little
looked
bit.
at a bull riding thing and go, I want to do that. I've never done that. But I know there's some people out there that do. But no, not me.
But just that it's so wildly unpredictable. You're dealing with an animal that's mad and can kill you.
Yeah.
So it's such an unpredictable thing. And when you're dealing with people who it's not a guarantee that they're gonna stay on that thing, or that they're gonna be safe. As much as you don't want anybody to get hurt, it puts you on the edge of your seat, and there's so much anticipation what's gonna happen. So I
What
really
else
enjoy
did they
that
have
aspect of
besides
it.
the bull
That's
riding?
some Broncos too. And
Yeah.
this is another funny thing with the unpredictable aspect of it. There was a, you know, they open the cage, the stable, or whatever it is, and
Shoot.
yeah, the chute. Thanks. And
Ah. I don't know much. Once in a while, I get lucky.
yeah,
Yeah, there you go.
they send the Broncos bucking out of the chute,
Now, these are
and
horses, by the way.
yeah,
Yeah.
and uh, They open the shoot once with all this, the music's building, all the anticipation, everyone's anxious to see what's going to happen. And the horse is just standing there, not moving. And everyone's
Okay.
like, what? And they close the shoot again. And then they retie, they get everything ready again. And then they open it, and the horse is just standing there again. And then in an instant, it just takes off in a deadbolt straight for the fence.
Explodes.
It doesn't, it's not really even bucking. It just runs straight to the fence and just slams the rider to the fence. He was fine. He was all right. He walked away, but
Well,
just
sometimes horses try to rub you off of them,
right.
you know,
But it's an unpredictable thing. You're dealing with an animal, a huge
with a
animal.
brain and they're thinking, what am I doing here? And I
There's
don't
no
like this
rules,
or
really.
whatever.
There's no rule. The rule is you stay on there for 8 seconds, you get a score, and then the rest is just.
So if you don't stay on for 8 seconds, you don't even get a score?
I believe that's how it works with the Broncos.
I don't know. Again, that's not something I want to do. Now we have a couple of horses and I have no desire to put on my spurs and make them do something. Now
Provoke them in that way.
I have seen my horses in their moments of excitement to get out into the pasture, they can lift their heels up and really be all excited and everything else and take flight for a short period of time, but they've never done that with somebody on them. But I don't want to encourage them to do that either. So you enjoyed that.
It's a thrill. I think that my type of rodeo is one like the Boundary County rodeo for sure, because it's a lot more thrilling when you just are you're you just don't know what's going to happen. I'm not really tuned into, who's riding and how good are
No,
they,
no, no.
or even the horses themselves. They have different characteristics. Like some of them are buck higher than others
And
and
someone
things
will
like
jump
that.
sideways all of a
Right.
sudden. They just
So
have different, yeah.
that it's wildly unpredictable, and that's what keeps you on the edge of your seat.
Now, did anybody get hurt?
Nobody got hurt. There's one guy who got, he was bull riding, and he got kicked in the head in his helmet, but
But he had a helmet.
he had a helmet on, and consolation there is he didn't get stepped on, which is a lot more force coming down on you.
Yeah.
So he shook it off.
He got up and.
I mean, it could have just been adrenaline or the crowd there, but he got up and he looked like he was all right.
He looked like he was all right. Now, another fun thing here in North Idaho is huckleberries.
Oh yeah.
Now, in the past few years, we've had an increased numbers of, not just out of towners, but out of staters coming for our huckleberries. And that is actually illegal. You cannot come in from out of state and take our huckleberries. But there's been a number of commercial pickers that come up here from wherever, California, Washington, Oregon, who knows where. And they finally kind of got serious about trying to stop that. So what'd you learn about that lately? Something did happen big, pretty big a
Oh yeah.
couple
There
years
was
ago.
so a lot of the commercial, if you're picking commercially, you're not really most of the time thinking about keeping these shrubs intact. You're ripping them to shreds because that's the most efficient way to harvest huckleberries. You can rake them off.
And I think having rakes is illegal. Yeah.
So in the process of doing that, you're damaging these plants that grow in the wild. And over the years, there's been conflicts. This is something that Sheriff Travis Stoley was telling me about a little bit. Just the conflicts among whether it's recreators or commercial pickers. There's people who get very territorial about their huckleberries, and
This
for good
is
reason.
my spot.
And for good reason, I mean, they're delectable. It's a good berry, but it's not a good idea to pull a gun on somebody
Which has happened
because over huckleberries of all
over
things,
huckleberries, yes.
or damage their property, trash a campsite, those types of things. So locally, our law enforcement has been making a push to the U.S. Forest Service, because it's their jurisdiction in the national forest lands. They've been asking, can we have a greater emphasis on patrol? And so over the years recently, there's been more collaboration between the U.S. Forest Service law enforcement and our local law enforcement to patrol these forest roads. They go cruising mountain roads. It's called Huckleberry Patrol, and it's something that the Forest Service actually provides grant funding to our local law enforcement to do a little overtime work and just make sure everyone's educated about, best practice when you're out there picking huckleberries and making sure there's nobody doing something they're not supposed to be doing. And earlier this month, or I guess last month in July, there was a bust up in the mountains here
Now,
in
this
town.
wasn't a drug bust. This is a
Not a drug bust,
huckleberry bust.
a
Yes.
huckleberry bust. They found a group, three individuals with a little bit of an unclear background, certainly not from Idaho. It's not clear whether or not they're in the country legally at all, who were commercially, they were raking the berries off of the shrubs and using leaf blowers and things like that. And they had 100 gallons of huckleberries. And our local law enforcement was out on Huckleberry Patrol with our U.S. Forest Service law enforcement officer. They found this, and pretty quickly they were able to discern it was a commercial operation, and they took care of it. They confiscated those berries, sent them to the local food bank, and yeah, it's a good example of how the crackdown is going, because it's possible that in years past things like that have happened
Now,
and there's no enforcement.
I heard a rumor, and you might want to follow up on this before you leave Friday for your rest of your life. But I heard a rumor that there was anonymous phone tips coming in from actual bears because they didn't want these berries taken away either. So they were working with law enforcement to get these guys because they like the berries too. Have you heard anything about
Oh
that?
yeah, if you think that people are territorial about their huckleberries,
Oh, yeah.
that's nothing compared to a grizzly bear
Oh, yeah. And
or
black
black
bears
bear too.
too. Yeah. They're all into that. Absolutely.
15% grizzly bear's diet is
I
huckleberries,
think
just
if you
huckleberries.
got a court order and you could go in there and get some of the phone calls that have been taped, you might find some growly, I don't know, some berry being back. I want them stopped. Something like that, maybe? Maybe?
Yeah, I put in a Freedom of Information Act request to
For to find that out.
get the
Now,
transcripts from the bear's testimony.
you may laugh at the, you may think that, I don't know, these bears are smarter than you think. And if you're if, and if driven, to extreme actions, that they might be able to do that. Now, there's another some anonymous phone calls that came in, which caused, and maybe we're mistaking in the thinking it's bears, but maybe it was Sasquatch. Have you now you've been here 8 months and you've kind of been running around at the state refuge land and all that. Have you seen any evidence of Sasquatch?
Oh, tons of it.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
I haven't seen all yeah, I didn't see any stories in the
Well,
paper.
it's just, they try to suppress the
Have you
story of
been told
Sasquatch.
not to write stories about Sasquatch?
I don't want to compromise my integrity, Ted.
You have your confidential sources,
I've
though.
got, I mean, let's just say that he's out there.
Oh, you believe.
Oh yeah.
You believe.
A absolutely. I
Yep.
mean,
Okay. Well, I mean, I've had
is the
fishing
sky
game.
blue, Ted?
I love it. That's perfect answer. There you go. Come on, stop denying the obvious. I've had fishing game come in here and go, oh no, there's nothing like that. Yeah. I just don't know. How much do we believe government when they start to deny the obvious?
I mean, think about it. They would not want us to know that what they have on Sasquatch.
No. It might cause a panic.
Right,
Who
right.
knows? Yeah. Okay. So now on another serious topic, we have some people here in the area who now are famous paddlers.
Oh yeah.
Now what?
Pretty
Now
cool story.
are the canoers? They're not canoers.
Kayakers.
Kayakers. Okay. So what's going on with that?
So this is a duo that I'm gonna put you in touch with, because
Yes, I'm going to get them on my podcast.
their story is pretty awesome. But it's a couple from Moyet Springs, Julie Kirk and Josh Friedman, who they've been doing endurance paddling for a long, long time. That they are it's called dual blading when you have a kayak, because you're going right left. But they were on they broke a Guinness World Record for distance paddling on a dragon boat, which is a single blade. A dragon boat is there's 16 people on this boat, and you're sitting shoulder to shoulder with somebody on a very uncomfortable wood board. It's about 6 inches wide, and you're just paddling one way, just on your right shoulder,
Or the other
or on
person's
your left
left
shoulder.
shoulder. Okay.
Yeah, and there's 16 of you, and they've broken two world records now for dragon boat paddling. First, in 2023, they paddled the farthest distance anyone has gone in dragon boat in the span of 24 hours. And then most recently, they broke the longest distance of consecutive travel. Do you want to take a guess what that is? It's unfathomable how far they went in a
I can't
dragon
even
boat.
imagine that one.
571 miles consecutively, which is, oh, I don't have their time on hand. I think it was like 37 hours straight or something like that on a super uncomfortable
Now,
boat.
is this on a lake, a river?
So they do several different races. This race in particular, this is the Missouri River 340. So they were on the Missouri River, and anybody on any type of paddling vessel, it's a stand-up paddleboard, a kayak, dual kayak, whatever, can enter into this race. And they took a dragon boat, which is not designed for distance. It's designed for speed. So they took something that's extremely difficult to take a long distance, and they took it 570 miles.
Now, are they going downstream or upstream?
They're going downstream,
Okay, but still.
which is a yeah, that's an important detail. But still, I mean, I couldn't imagine.
How many hours?
It was like 37 hours.
Are they turn sleeping?
That's the thing.
How do they go to the
People are
bathroom? What's going on?
right. These are all really good questions
Yeah, I'm going to have them on as a guest. I'm going to find out.
Julie and Josh have got all kinds of stories about it, but the short answer is you don't sleep. And as you're falling asleep, you got your teammates there to give you a lift, and you just got to keep going.
Oh,
And
wow.
to me, what's shocking is not just the endurance that goes into it physically, but it's the mental aspect of, I mean, obviously, right? You have to mind over body, that whole thing. But to stay focused, I mean, think about how many of us can concentrate on something, just one thing, for over a day straight.
I struggle with
Even
five or
something that,
ten minutes. A
yeah,
1 hour podcast is my
yeah.
limit.
Even something that has no, it's not labor intensive at all. It's extremely hard to focus for such a long time like that. And so then you tack on the fact that they're pushing their bodies to the physical limit, and it's pretty extraordinary.
Well, I'm gonna have them on, and you're gonna get me my information, right? My
Absolutely. I'm going
contact
to do that
information.
today.
That's right. So, well, Ned, we're just about out of time here, and I apologize for not having you on more frequently to talk about the news and so on.
Well, like I
I
said, you've
don't.
had some incredible guests, so.
Yes, and I'm not really doing the news per se with my podcast because it just isn't timely. It's not current. I do one or two a week, and so I like to try to just interview people and get the human element and stories and maybe a broader perspective on things. So I should have had you on more often just to get that element added to the podcast because I know people really they want to know what's going on. And nobody knows what's going on better than the local ACE reporter. Right?
I really appreciate that you brought me back on.
And
So,
you take your camera and you take pictures and all kinds of stuff. So, but sometimes I question I question your decision on what to include in stories because you actually quoted me in a story. That's I don't think that was a good idea.
Well, you had an interesting point. It was for when Ted was inducted into the Rotary last month. He had a really, really interesting point about how it can be hard at times, like we were talking about earlier, to broaden your community connections.
Right. So
And a great way to do that, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm quoting you here and like paraphrasing, but a good way to do that is through the Rotary.
yeah, it is. Now, I will say the rest of my background check is probably going to come in. I may not be a member of the Rotary within a few weeks. Who knows? But so I might have another quote follow up like, "Well, those guys are no good." But as of now, everything's fine. So, what do you hope to be doing? What do you hope to be doing in 5 years from now? You got a big plan?
Well, I think that,
Bull riding?
yeah, I think I'm going to be out here in Idaho doing some bull riding. No, I
No.
think that, I think that local journalism matters a tremendous amount. For people to stay informed and tethered to what's happening locally, because there's so many different things you can hear about. I mean, there's so much controversy all the time. At any point in time, you look back and there's so much controversy in what's happening around the country and around the world. And with local journalism, it gives you a really concrete understanding of what's happening. You can maybe see the controversy that's happening across the country or across the world, and you can see how it applies to where we are locally. And that gives you that makes it gives it a ton of meaning to me.
Make
Like,
it relevant to the local citizen.
right, because there's things that affect us here that need to be talked about, and it's just concrete. It's you get it at face value. You're talking with people locally who own businesses or are elected in the office. So these are people that you see in the grocery store, and these are people who represent you as directly as you could possibly be represented
Yeah.
in the government. So there are some newspapers around the country who are locally that have been shutting their doors. So there's towns that they don't know when the next
Newspapers,
election's
yeah.
coming up. They don't know who's running for office, and they don't know when meetings are happening. And I mean, it's important for connectivity of our towns across the country to have strong newspapers people can trust that are reliable, credible,
Well, maybe
consistent.
someday you'll have your own weekly newspaper
Maybe
that
so,
you
maybe
can, and then
so.
a chain of weekly newspapers, and that was kind of an early dream of mine at one point, but somehow I got sidetracked and became a school teacher instead. But so Ned, again, thank you so much, and I wish you nothing but the best, and maybe you'll be back someday in our town to maybe you'll buy the local newspaper. Ooh, wouldn't that be something? No, maybe
Time will
not.
tell. Time will
Time will
see.
tell. That's exactly
We'll
right.
see.
So anyway, thank you for your time, and we've pretty much used up all of our time here. And if any of you have any questions or comments or suggestions, don't hesitate to shoot me an email at northidahopodcast@gmail.com. And is there any way people could kind of stay in touch with you? You got an email address or something that maybe we could follow up on, or maybe
I
not?
think that my Bonner's Ferry Herald email address will still be active.
Okay.
nnewton@bonnersferryherald.com. You can reach me there. And if you'd rather talk to me, because maybe you know me or you know my writing, and then have a suggestion for how the paper could be covering something, then I'm still connected with, the other writers and editors.
Right.
So I can pass that information along. I'm
Absolutely.
always be available for
Well,
that.
you've had a very positive impact on our community,
I really
and
appreciate that.
the town will miss you. Many
Thanks,
of many
Ted.
people in the town will miss you. Ned has now left the studio, and as I pondered after he left, I thought I'd offer, a few words of advice, suggestions, thoughts. that he might benefit from and that my listeners in general might benefit from. As many of you can probably tell, I really like Ned. I actually see some of myself in him when I was in my early 20s. And so I want to take a couple of minutes to offer him some thoughts and guidance as he embarks on this new adventure. The Bible offers clear encouragement for moving on to new challenges and opportunities, grounding our steps in faith rather than fear. Scripture teaches that change is often part of God's plan, requiring us to trust His guidance even when the path ahead feels uncertain. Proverbs 3:5-6 reminds us to trust in the Lord with all your heart, and He will make your path straight, assuring us that God directs the way when we submit to Him. Moving forward also means releasing the past. Isaiah 43:18-19 urges us to forget the former things and recognize the new thing God is doing, showing that growth often requires letting go. When new opportunities seem intimidating, Joshua 1:9 calls us to be strong and courageous, knowing God's presence goes with us in every situation. The Apostle Paul models momentum in Philippians 3:13-14, choosing to forget what lies behind and pressing toward His calling. This reminds us that new seasons are not just about personal advancement, but about fulfilling God's greater purpose for our lives. Likewise, 1 Peter 4:10 teaches that new roles and challenges give us fresh opportunities to use our gifts to serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace. Taken together, these passages reveal that moving on is not merely a career decision or life change. It is an act of obedience and trust. Each new challenge is an invitation to grow, to depend on God more deeply, and to walk boldly into the good works that He has already prepared for us. So, Ned, in closing and in saying goodbye, I wish to offer this prayer for you. Lord, as Ned steps into this new season, help him release the past and trust you fully. Give him courage for the unknown, wisdom for each decision, and a heart that seeks to serve you in all he does. Lead Ned into the good plans that you have prepared for him. Amen.